department and to all our guests. Parliamentary Vigil and the State Law Advisor. We are here today because we are to still deal with the business of the NAPISA Bill. If members remember very well, is that there were areas that people who are dealing with legal were then going to come, clean up, and then make a presentation to us. So that's where we are today. I'm not going to waste our time. I'm going to start with the normalities, the introduction, and for those that are here maybe for the first time, the rules are you tell us your name and your surname and your institution where you're coming from. Phones are off. Questions are asked only by honorable members to whoever will be making a presentation. Having said that, my name is Lindelwa Tunjwa. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee of Health. Honorable members.
Good morning, my name is Fish Mhlabela.
My name is Rachel Evans.
Morning, my name is Nguyen Mbonzo.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Nonta Samubendara, member of the committee.
Morning, I'm Donald W. Primaka, a member of the committee.
Good morning to you. My name is Lindy Wilson. I'm a member of this portfolio. Thank you.
Department. Good morning, Chairperson and honourable members. I'm Gail Andrews. I'm the acting DG today. I also have to apologise. Our DG could not be here because she's at the World Health Centre in Geneva. The members from Timor Institute.
My name is Michelle Bishop from the Department of Health.
Itumele Fulani, Department of Health.
Karen Chetty, Acting CEO of the NHLS. Mr. Tetrana,
Department of Health.
Michael Weiler, Department of Health.
I'm Pete Donovan from the Office of Chief Justice.
Oh, hello, Ling Strohan.
I'm thinking that's what I have for the Department of Health.
Frank Makua, Minister of Health.
Lynn Morris, the NICD.
Sophia Fisting, NIOH.
I'm Obi Makinde Samuel from PMG.
Thank you all, members. We've got some. I forgot to introduce the support staff. Ms. Makalamba is off sick.
Sorry.
So she has been. Ms. Pasia. Casey Pasia is the one who is standing in. For her. At the back is the Lilukuhle, who's our content advisor, Zube, researcher. Next to Zube is Moses, who's also a researcher, part of the research team. And there was a Lutan who was seated there. I don't know where she's going to, who is the secretary to the study group of the Afghanistan Congress. And next to Ms. Pasia is Ms. Sue N. can I just check on our members if all of us have got the... Oh, sorry. We've got a couple of apologies. Mr. Jafta is writing examination. Mr. Lukwayo is not well. Ms. Lungiswa James, family responsibility. And Ms. Kopana is also got family responsibility. Those are the apologies that we are having today. Having said that, can I just check if all of us have got the documents? The documents that we are going to be utilizing for today is the principal bill itself, the copy. I hope all of us do have that. And the document where the presenter is then going to take us through. If all of us have got those two documents, we are then going to start. Can I just check NICT, do you have the covers? Oh, okay. If honorable members, just going back to my opening remarks, if we remember, we then said that the legal persons must go, come back, and then they will then make a presentation to us in a normal portfolio committee sitting. So that's where we are today. And I will then hand over to Ms. Sue Ann Isaacs, who is our parliamentary legal officer, who is then going to take us through in terms of what they have submitted take us through both. So I will hand over to you, ma'am. Thank you very much.
Good morning to the members of the committee, officials and guests. As the chairperson indicated in the last meeting, myself and the legal advisor from the party were requested to consider the proposals made by the committee and to come up with a proposed list of amendments. We have liaised before this meeting, and the document that you see before you is consolidated document with all our inputs, and we have agreed to these proposed amendments. It is now for the committee to consider and indicate to us whether they're in agreement with the proposed amendments. The first issue that I was asked to consider was the insertion of environmental health. The first question is whether there was going to be an overlap of functions by inserting environmental health into the peace double. I was asked by the DG to just check the National Health Act to determine whether there is going to be any kind of overlap with the issues of environmental health in that act. So I looked at the act and I note that there's an Office of Health Status Compliance Board, which is set up in terms of the National Health Act, and it does deal specifically with issues of environmental health. What I note is that this office, the Office of Health Standards Compliance, has a very specific function when it deals with environmental health. So in terms of Section 78 of the National Health Act, this office's specific role is to protect and promote the health and safety of users of health services. They do this by monitoring and enforcing compliance of health enforcing compliance by health establishments with norms and standards prescribed by the minister in terms of the national health system and ensuring consideration, investigation.
Sorry, so just sorry to disturb. I just want to, because I don't think members, not unless they will Google, do have the copy of the National Health Act. Are you comfortable with her reading? So that we don't delay. So are we comfortable with her reading us? Those that have got their laptops or tablets, they can just go and check. But so that we are not. And I will appreciate if you are not you don't become fast, so that they are able to. Okay.
Sure.
No, honourable member, you are out of order. No, you are out of order, Honorable Ndaba.
No, what I'm saying is that, you know, sometimes it's difficult to listen to somebody when he's presenting something that you don't have before you. And I think what happens most of the time when the legal unit come to the portfolio committee and present something, they come with written documents. I don't have a problem of the way you think, but what I'm saying is what is proper is for the legal unit to present a document to us so that as she presents or reads, we are able to read even ourselves and to internalize and digest what she's reading. In terms, this is a bill check. So we can't just listen to a person making a presentation and then we think that thing is enough. So I'm just raising this thing.
Can we?
If we are doing justice to a bill, we must have proper documents so that we can be able to go through as members. Because if chair, they were giving us documents before we come to a portfolio committee, it was something better. But now we are in a portfolio committee and she's presenting something that we must just think, at the same time we must process it. It becomes very difficult. No, it's fine.
Can we? Because I wanted to just make a...
No, Chair. The issue Ndaba is raising, it's got a point, but the problem of the matter the manner is raising is that we've never raised the issue as a problem ourselves. Is the DG that said they must just check whether there's no conflict. So it's just trying to clarify whether there's a conflict or no conflict. So it has got nothing to do with what we've proposed ourselves. That's my understanding. So there's no need, therefore, to have written it. And then, and also on that day, the DG also did even refer us to the section in the National Health Act, of which some of us went to the National Health Act just to look into it and satisfy ourselves what does it say. So she's trying just to clarify that matter, that as a committee, because we're insisting that environmental health will be included, to come and explain that she did then check what the DG said should be checked in terms of whether the inclusion of the environmental health will not be a repetition or an overlap of the current function that is being performed in terms of the National Health Act as amended. That's how we understood it. So that has been the interpretation. So it doesn't have much impact on the bill that we're dealing with. That's how I understood it. If it had a direct impact, I would understand the point that it should be written down. But it doesn't.
No, thank you, Honorable Mashalel. So I think we can continue. The only thing that I would just request is that in reading, don't be a bit fast. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the National Health Act, I'm referring to Section 78, which is the object of the Office of the Health Standards Compliance. And just to summarize, because I don't also necessarily want to bog down the members with the section, the object of this office is regarding monitoring and compliance of norms and standards in terms of the Health Act. The Act lists out certain functions for this office, and they advise the minister on the determination of the norms and standards. They also inspect and certify health establishments, they investigate complaints, and they monitor indicators, and there's a whole list of functions for them in terms of Section 79. If we turn specifically to Section 83, which deals with environmental health investigations, in terms of this section, it provides that if a health officer has reasonable grounds to believe that any condition exists which constitutes a violation in terms of Section 24A of the Constitution, and that is dealing with the environment, or if there's constitutes pollution or is likely to cause harm or constitute a health nuisance, that health officer must investigate such condition. So in terms of that section, if there is some violation of the norms and standards, the health officer can investigate. So here we have the Natural Health Act providing specifically for environmental health, but it's more about compliance with norms and standards and giving this office the power to investigate where there's a failure to comply. Now, if we contrast that with the functions of NAPISA, NAPISA is more of a coordination body. It's set up to, for surveillance and to coordinate functions across different sectors on a national level, and also to kind of have integration with global and other countries. So NAPISA's functions are more high level than this specific office. This office deals with specific complaints, where NAPISA is trying to deal with policy issues and deal with more national issues. So if we contrast NAPISA's functions, specifically where we want to insert environmental health, if we look at clause 3 of the bill, and specifically the places, for instance, in clause 3, item I, they strengthen cross-border, regional, and international collaborations, and we're going to include environmental health there. Strengthen surveillance, provide technical support for all spheres of government in item N, coordinate research where appropriate. So the point I'm trying to make is, while there may be some areas where there is a bit of overlap, the functions are very different. So the PISA is going to operate in a different level, and this particular office deals with more localized kind of complaints. So in my view, there isn't necessarily a conflict, or there's going to be an overlap of functions in terms of by inserting environmental health into the bill. That said, we can now proceed to look at the specific amendments in the document that proposed amendments.
Look, before that, can I just establish we follow that explanation that has been provided to us by the parliamentary legal person. So if we are all we understand where the background will then go to then the actual documentation and the area. Thank you.
Chairperson, most of the amendments deal with the insertion of the word environmental health. And there are places where, as a result of inserting environmental health, it is what we call the technical amendment. So we have to make certain amendments to make it read right and take out certain the punctuation. So I'm going to try to explain. So members will need the bill itself, and the way we do the amendments, we will have to check in specifically in the line. So the first amendment is on the last page because of the way it's drafted. So the preamble, if you look at page 6 of the document that's with proposed amendment.
Sorry, why are you taking us from the back? Will it not
be fine? The preamble is last because it is not part of the bill itself.
Okay.
So it's the drafting style.
Okay.
So preamble on page 6. If we look at page 2 and in the first line of the preamble,
the last page of this document. The last page of this document, where it's written preamble, page 6, at the back. Okay, you might continue.
So, Chairperson, we are going to insert after the word health that is on page on the first line of the preamble. So you see the preamble, I mean, it says recognizing, and the second recognizing, and then the second line in that, the first one is health. So that's the first line, and we're going to insert the word environmental health to, as the committee has instructed us. Also in the preamble, so Shabazin, it will be now recognizing that communicable diseases, recognizing that communicable and non-communicable diseases, occupational health, injuries, occupational health, environmental health, injuries and prevention of violence are important health challenges in South Africa. So it's really to insert that word to bring it in line with what the committee has suggested. Similarly, in line the 24th line of the preamble, we again insert environmental health after health in the
is she saying we are going to put environmental health before injury? Oh, okay.
So Chopin, it's merely technical amendments. Wherever the word environmental health needs to be inserted, where the other list of areas are, we're going to also insert environmental health in the preamble. So similarly, on page 2, in the 24th line, we are going to insert environmental health in that list. So you will provide coordinated disease and injuries, and then we will also insert environmental health. So it's merely a technical amendment. Chairperson, if we go to the beginning again, and we can now go to the content of the bill. On page 2, we have the definition. Minister means Minister of Health, and it is suggested that this could be changed to say cabinet member responsible for health instead of saying Minister of Health. The reason being is that sometimes portfolios change, and it's just easier to say cabinet minister responsible for health. So if the portfolio changes to something else, then it's not Minister of Health. It's merely a drafting style.
Agreed. Any comments from the government? Okay, good question.
So the next is clause 2 on page 3 of the bill. We're dealing with the second amendment. So number 1 and number 2 are two technical, that's your punctuation. Your first one is going to delete and on line 24 of page 3. So you say cancer surveillance and you're deleting and then on the next amendment is line 25. You are taking out the full stop and putting in a semicolon, and then you want to insert environmental health on S. So all of the first two are technical amendments for punctuation, and your main amendment is number 3, which is to insert environmental health. So the clause will now be they thereby establish a juristic person to be known as the National Public Health Institute of South Africa, comprising of divisions dealing with the following: A, communicable diseases; B, non-communicable diseases; C, occupational health; D, cancer surveillance; E, injuries and violence and violence prevention; and then F, environmental health.
We've got F, environmental health. Any comments in that new insertion? Are we all?
Yeah.
Okay, you can continue.
Chairperson, the next clause in which we're inserting the word environmental health is in clause 3. Specifically, we're going to look at I. So at the end of that sentence, we inserted environmental health to include also the
Are we in agreement with that insertion? Can I get Honorable Ngonza? Honorable Ngonza, your mic is not...
It's not looking at me. After collaboration on communicable diseases, non-communicable diseases, how about occupational health? Because I see environmental health going to infect at the end. But after non-communicable diseases, shouldn't we go for the relation of occupational health?
What were you proposing, Honorable?
No.
So that you have been corrected.
Just to point out that wherever on the list of divisions in 2 appears anywhere in the Act, we have amended it to be in the same order as 2. So wherever that list is, we've got it in the same order, and F will be environmental health. So we change the order to read with 2, and then J as well. It's the same insertion of environmental health at the end of the sentence. So you've got your J, and you've just inserted environmental health. All right. So that's the line of page 3, line 54. Currently the bill says that the NAPISA must support the health sector response and make recommendations to government. It was suggested that this change to the Department of Health, because this is the direct department that they would be accountable to, and it would be a place for them to make their recommendations.
There is the proposed insertion. Are we okay with it, or members? That's page 3, line 45. Can I get an indication before we pass? Can we pass? We're happy with that insertion, Honourable Members. Okay. All right. Okay, Mr. Chairperson, we can move to page 4 of the bill. And that's clause 3 again, but on page 4, line 4, item N, again we are inserting the word environmental health. So you have that particular function for the visa, and including environmental health at the end of the list. Just to also say similarly with O, the function for the visa, and again including environmental health in that sentence. So again, it's just to bring it in line with the committee's amendment. Agreed? Okay. Can continue.
And again, in item 4 on page 2 of the proposed amendment, it says on page 4 and line 15, we are again in Q, we are inserting environmental health in terms of the piece of function in terms of Q. So again, it's to bring it in line.
All right. I think Honorable Michelle.
Yeah, just the writing style. After communicable, the expectation is that it should be non-communicable. But you've taken the non-communicable to make an example.
I think for consistency purposes, okay. Are you done, Honorable Michelle? Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's what I was raising, but after communicable diseases, you need to transport non-communicable to that, follow that, and then from there, occupational life.
Thank you. I think we're all in agreement. Amongst other things, the appropriate representation of race, gender, and disability. And in the first item is A, an official from the Department of Health, and the change it's proposing is to B. It's merely to make it clearer. It currently reads B, two members who have special knowledge in economic, financial matters, or accounting and legal matters. So if you, what is not clear here is whether one person must have knowledge in economics, financial matters, and accounting, and the other person must have knowledge in legal matters, or it can be any mix of the both. So just to say one person must have knowledge in I, and the other person must have knowledge in item 2. So it will now read two members, each with special knowledge in one of the following areas. So one person must have knowledge in economics, financial matters, or accounting, and the other person must have knowledge in legal matters. Are we fine with that, honorable member? Okay.
Alright. Similarly, in C, again, it's merely to clarify that we want off that list. We want one person each. So we said instead of saying seven members comprising one member each with special knowledge, we're suggesting that it says seven members each with special knowledge in one of the following areas. So that when the appointments are made, each person must come from one of those fields. It's merely a drafting issue to make it clearer.
Okay.
If you look at clause D of, subsection D, we remove that one community representative. So it's not in your proposed amendments because it's been deleted. So when the bill goes through, that D will no longer be there in the B bill.
Agreed? Okay.
Chairperson, the next set of amendments is to clause 6. And we deleted clause 6.3 according to the committee's instructions because there will no longer be a community representative. So in the B bill, clause 6.3 will no longer be there. And we've renumbered the section.
Okay. Do we follow that, honorable members? Are we comfortable? Okay. All right.
First, in the next clause, we're looking at clause 8 on the bottom of page 6 of the bill. During the last meeting, there was an issue of the kind of the ethical or the standing of the person who would be appointed to the board. So we've inserted in further requirements. So a person who is appointed in terms of 8.1b, and you said we included fit and proper, so that person cannot be not be fit and proper. So it's just one more addition. So the requirements will now read, a person may not be appointed, and we said also to remain as a member of the board if that person is not a South African citizen an ordinary resident in the Republic, and we've added is not fit and proper, and then the list continues, is an unrehabilitated insolvent. Then in terms of D, you want me to go on, we've just clarified if a person is convicted in a court of law. Currently, the bill deals with only convictions for financial dishonesty. And when I looked at other legislation, they've also concerned, especially with what the members said in the previous meeting, what if a person on the board is convicted for other serious offense that does not involve financial dishonesty, and they get, you know, a serious sentence, so there's no ground for them to be automatically disqualified. So it suggested that there's also other offences such as, you know, violence, assault and stuff where people get convicted, and we don't necessarily want those sort of members on the board. So we just created two different levels to that now. So we inserted in 81D, as at any time being convicted in a court of an offence and sentenced to more than 12 months imprisonment without an option of a fine. So that usually is someone who's been convicted of quite a serious offense. And in terms of B, the same as of an offense involving dishonesty, when in the Republic or outside the Republic, if the conduct constituting that offense would have been an offense in the Republic, and sentenced to imprisonment without the option of the fine. So anyone who's convicted of an offense that they have been sentenced to 12 months without an option of a fine, and any person who's been convicted of an offense of dishonesty, whether in South Africa or outside, will now be automatically disqualified from membership of the board.
Honourable Wilson.
Thank you, Chair. I'm quite happy with the amendments in the court. I'm a lot happier with the amendments in the court. Just for a point of clarity, who vets these people?
It's not included in the bill, but it is a qualification requirement. So when the person is nominated, it will be expected that the appointing authority, who is the minister, must vet these people, because otherwise they're automatically disqualified from being appointed. So there must be a vetting act before the appointment.
Okay, covered. All right. We are with the clarification. Responded to, are we comfortable? Are we agreeing with the... Okay, can we pass? Thank you.
Chairperson, the next clause where there is an amendment is in clause 12. that is dealing with the functions of the chief executive officer.
Sorry, before that, Honorable Mashele.
No. Before that, I just want to get a clarity as to what is the rationale removing removing 2E, because you have not said anything about that.
Sorry, Chairperson. Thank you, Member, for picking that up. I just glanced over it. I forgot to mention it. The reason why it is suggested that it be omitted, because it's already covered in terms of 2A. So it says a member of the board, but the KTs or office, if he becomes he or she becomes disqualified in terms of subsection 1. So it's repeating what 2A says. So if you are no longer ordinary resident in South Africa, that is an automatic disqualification. So it is covered in clause 2A.
Are you clarified, Honourable Member? Is it fine?
Just to talk about.
Honourable Wilson? Okay.
Honourable Wilson.
Thank you, Chair. I want to talk about it's the clause 8, 2, 4 and 5. The minister may remove a board member from the office on account of misconduct or inability to perform his or her duties efficiently after due inquiry. And I want to then go to clause 11, line 50. The appointment of a person as the chief executive officer is subject to the conclusion of a written performance agreement entered into between that person and the board. Surely then, if the minister has the power to remove a board member on account of misconduct or inability, that clause 11.3 should read, the appointment of a person as the chief executive officer is subject to the conclusion of a written performance agreement entered into between that person and the board in collaboration with the minister.
Well, that will be a problem. Maybe we can say after, but not the in, because it means the board then will be tied in into end, because they can't enter into an agreement if the minister says no, and the CEO is accountable to the board. If we want to make sure that whatsoever agreement that the board reaches with the CEO has got a political blessing, we would rather say after, so that then the board is, once there's agreement, then they go and consult the minister, and then from there the minister will know what they are agreeing on, and then but the final responsibility to sign the agreement should be with the board, not with both of them, not with both the minister and the board. That would create a problem in terms of accountability.
I think it's clear, and that's how it. Do you want to make a follow up on that?
I hear what my colleague says, and yes, I'm 100% in agreement with him. It's just I'm trying to tie the two, that there's the balance. The minister may remove a board member. So I agree that after collaboration with the minister, I'm happy with that. But you can't have, because if you're going to take the political will out of it, then the minister can't remove a board member. Then the board must.
No, we must separate the two. The board is appointed by the minister. So the one who appoints has got then the ability to remove. The CEO is not appointed by the minister. The CEO is appointed by the board. So the minister doesn't have authority to remove the CEO because he doesn't appoint the CEO.
No, I think it's really quite clear. I think what is important is, do you want to come in? Okay. But I just wanted to say what is important is that who appoints who and who is accountable to who. I think that's what is the bottom line. But I will, if you want to.
Yes, Chair. Actually, it's the minister that appoints, so it's the board in consultation with the minister that appoints the chief executive. The appointment of the chief executive to the subject to the performance agreement does not relate to the removal of the chief executive. It's just a performance agreement.
Yeah.
So the appointment is not a link to the removal. Exactly.
No, thank you very much. Thank you very much. I think that it's clear. It's more clear. Can we then continue? We are on clause. We're on page 6, if I'm not mistaken.
So we're at the bottom of page 5, and then we're on 6, of clause 12, dealing with the functions of the chief executive officer. So the adding of a D, so the First Amendment is in on page 8, line 13, to omit and, that is made legal punctuation. And we are after C, 12C, we added and, and then we inserted on page 6, clause D, and we're saying that it will now read, the chief executive officer, D, subject to the Public Finance Management Act, must cause the necessary accounting and other records to be kept. So we're really adding one more function for the chief executive officer to ensure that this person complies with the PFMA to ensure that there's accounting record.
Good. Okay. Okay, then continue.
Yes, Chairperson, and the next clause is going to be a new clause. That's on the law, page 6, and it's going to be a new clause 13. So in your B board, you'll have clause 13, annual report. The reason for inserting this clause was there was concern raised about the accountability and the submission of annual report. So basically, this is just to bring it in line with the PFMA, and this new clause 13 will say, subject to the Public Finance Management Act, A, the chief executive officer must, in consultation with the board, prepare and submit an annual report, financial statement, and the report of audited financial statements to the minister, and B, the minister must table the annual report and statements referred to in paragraph A in Parliament within 1 month of receipt thereof. So that's really to say that there must be an annual report, and in terms of the PFMA, the normal processes which the committee is familiar with, and then that report will come to Parliament.
That is, honourable members, we have got a new clause now, which is clause 13. First, we are in agreement with the content of that clause, okay? But two, it then means anything after the numbering, after 13 changes, there's a new 13, then it will be the old 13 will be 14, as we, okay. Which then touches on to, we don't have clause 21 now, because the committee has agreed, we've got clause 22 in relation to the document that you have got. All right. If we are in agreement with that, can we then... okay.
Chair, I'm just going to question the see if I'm understanding correctly. In other entities, the chief executive prepares the annual report, but because the board is actually the accounting entity, it's the board's responsibility to table it to the minister, not the chief executive's responsibility. But here it seems that we might be inferring that the chief executive must prepare and submit it to the minister. And I think that might not be correct.
If I'm reading it, she will come in. It's saying, in consultation with the board. So that means it's not going only to submit that without the knowledge of the board. I think that's what the clause is saying, that must in consultation with the board.
I think the point I'm making is it's not the in consultation part. It's the responsibility of who is the responsible to submit the report. It's the board responsible to submit. So the chair of the board is actually the person that must submit the report to the minister, not the chief executive in consultation with the board. It's the board that must actually do so. Now the chief executive is a member of the board, yes. And so it will be done in consultation, but it's the board's responsibility to submit to the minister. In that context, it will be the chairperson of the board on behalf of the board that will do so.
Can we engage with that, honourable members? Honourable Mashalila?
Well, in all the legislation, it's written that the CEO that submits the report. That's how it is written. You can copy and check all the legislation. That's how it is written, unless you want us to change that. We know that the accounting authority is the board, but that's how most all legislation, even the Office of the Health Compliance Standard, it says the CEO, it doesn't say the board, because it's an administrative a person.
But
the report must be adopted by the board first. Then once adopted, then this is an administrative process. Once the board has adopted that report, then the CEO has gotten their responsibilities and obligation
because he's the accounting officer. The board is an accounting authority. The CEO is an accounting officer. And these are financial matters and annual reports, which therefore, in terms of the PFMA, they're the one that are supposed to submit to, is the one that is accountable in terms of the accounting, in terms of the PFMA, the accounting officer, not the accounting authority.
I'll withdraw. I just want to get a clarification. We were advised by the state law advisors that where you have an accounting entity, you do not have an accounting officer. But I will withdraw because I think we went along in circles.
Do you want to? Your body language says to me you want to respond.
It's not a problem because it's subject to the PFMA. So the board is the board is accounting authority in terms of the PMA, but it must ensure that these things happen. So in terms of the PFMA, the board must ensure. So because this L clause is subject to the PFMA, it will still be the board's fiduciary duty to make sure that everything is done correctly under the PFMA.
But just to make everybody to be comfortable, there are two areas that Honourable Mahlalela has raised. In fact, three. One, that all legislations that are being written, if then we introduce something else, it then means everything we have to change. But two is that there's an accounting officer and an accounting authority. How those two work, it's very important. So I think as we move forward, and also the department will have to also remind. I mean, I know it's a new bill, would have loved things to be done this way and that way, but we can't. We are always guided by the consistency in other legislations and knowing the distinction between the accounting authority and the accounting officer, who is accountable to who. So I think we're comfortable with that, members. Honourable Mashale?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If you read, for example, the National Land Act as amended, you say the chief executive officer must once annually report financial statement and audited report that have been tabled in Parliament. That means through the minister, then that's what must be, that's how the cycle works. Because at the end of the day, even here in Parliament, we don't have a fussy when the chairperson is not there. But the chairperson can't come without the CEO.
Okay.
With withdrawal taken. Okay. Can we then pass?
Chairperson, the next, the last amendment, because we've already done the preamble, is clause 21.
Which is a new clause 22.
Chairperson, in the Bible, all of that will automatically So it's the short title of the act, and then in terms of this, it allows this act will be called the National Public Health Institute of South Africa Act, and we're going to change 2020 to 2018. As it comes to operation on a day fixed and when it comes to automation.
Okay, agreed. In us agreeing, there's an area that we would like us to clarify before we, is that in the memorandum, what then I, okay, I just want to put it in a more, that we have made some, we have agreed on the amendment. Is the memorandum automatically, as you go into all the areas that we have changed, it's also going to change? If you can make us clear on that, I think we'll be fine.
Yes, Chairperson, we needed for the committee to agree to this proposal, then all the other technical amendments will come after that.
No, thank you very much, because at times we don't want to take things for granted. law is such a very strange and a confusing subject. With that, honourable members, I think that's what we then, in the last meeting, agreed that that's what the law advisors are to come and advise. We deliberate. I'm sorry, we agree on them. And then now we're going to go to the next phase. The next phase where now we will then go line by line in then finally agreeing on the bill. With that, I think we have come to the end of our meeting today. And thank you very much preparing for a, you know, looking into a bill, a new one. It's not quite an easy process, but I think we are doing good, and I hope we will when we come to the end, we will also be in the same year. Now, thank you very much, honourable members, and I would humbly request that members keep their copies with. These copies are not going to be recirculated. We've got this. We must keep these documents. In the next meeting, we'll be expected to come with these documents. So the committee section won't prepare anything new for us. All right. Thank you very much. Our meeting is adjourned.